Well, welcome to Black Family Table Talk. I just read your extensive background. I am so impressed. You said you're 75 years old. You are a lieutenant colonel in the Army.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that must have been a time period. I can't imagine. Yes. 28 years.
Welcome to Season 5 of Black Family Table Talk. We are your hosts, Tony and Tony. Our hope is that we create a safe place to sit down to discuss ways to build a strong Black family.
Whether it's parenting, relationship building, health, finances, or advocacy, Black Family Table Talk is the voice for Black families. This season is brought to you by ABTF Travels. Join us for an epic adventure of a lifetime as we host an official delegation of artists and art enthusiasts in Ghana, West Africa. Please refer to our products page, blackfamilytabletalk.com/products, for more information.
Well, welcome to Black Family Table Talk. I just read your extensive background. I am so impressed. You said you're 75 years old. You are a lieutenant colonel in the Army.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that must have been a time period. I can't imagine. Yes. 28 years.
It was really 34. I made a misprint on my feet, and I asked one of the girls the other day, shall I get it changed? And she said, well, you really do need it changed. I said, but it's in my book, 28 years.
Oh, okay.
And I did 34 in the military. Wow. So I really need to get it changed in my book later.
I know we're going to talk about your book today, but I really, really want to know about your experience in the military at that time period.
Oh, wow.
And I know your husband wrote a book, you know, growing up in the South. I mean, so I know you got some stories.
I have another one to tell about my sister and I, and that's going to be in the upcoming book, plus my nutrition and health book. And it's just so much I want to do it at this time in life, and I just don't know. I want God to allow me to do it.
I mean, you 75 years young.
Yes.
You still doing it.
I'm trying. Yes. I said, oh my God. I said, what, you want me to just start talking? I mean, just start.
Well, I want to know what it was like
being in the military.
And you were an officer. You know,
first second lieutenant. Well, I tell you what, since you want to know about the military, I had a real desire to be an airline stewardess. That's what I had really intentions of doing. And during my high school, I wanted to be a nurse. Well, after I was a nurse, I said, well, I want to fly. You know, I want to be an airline stewardess. And I actually applied for stewardship, and I was turned down like 3 times. So at that time, you know, being Black in the 60s, 60s, 70s, you know, 70s, that wasn't a good time for us. But anyway, when I finished nursing school, I said that I really wasn't thinking. I never really thought about military. I was working, and one of my LPNs, and I'm being a nurse, RN, I was her RN, and she said to me, she said, Alice, have you ever considered maybe being a member of the National Guard? And I said, no, I never have. She said, well, my husband, John Drury, is they're looking for nurses. I said, they are? She said, I'm going to give you his number and have him to call you, and you call him. And I says, oh, okay. So he called me, and I went out to the Armory, called it Rick's Armory at the time, right here on Interstate 630. And I went in and talked to him, and he said, we'd love to have you. And he said, you'd be a nurse in Army Nurse Corps, and you would drill twice, once a month, 2 weeks a year, you'd have to leave your job and go out of town for practice, for training. And I said, oh, that sounds real interesting. I said, what I would do. So he told me what I would do. I said, I'll be working. He said, you'll be working with the soldiers, mostly doing medical screening, immunizations, and just keeping up with the soldiers. And I said, oh, that sounds fun. So I took him up on it. And I was wearing this big afro. And I went out. I never will forget. He said, you can come out. At the time, it was only he, Colonel Albritton, and Colonel Lassett. It was two in there, two Caucasians, one white female and one male. And he says, I want you to come out and you can be commissioned and sworn into the military. And we went out like on a Wednesday during the week. And he said, just come out and we'll swear you in. I said, okay. So I wore a little purple dress, had my big afro on, and it was a young nurse, white nurse. We both went together. We both were sworn in. And I don't even have a picture of us being sworn in that day with that afro on. Darn. Then I got ready for basic officer's training. Oh, this was something. This basic officer training, I had never flown before, never been on an airplane. And this was in 1971. Can you imagine? 1972 is when I actually went into training. Never had flown. And I had to go to Fort Sam, Houston. I was going to Fort Sam to the officer's training, basic officer training for the ANC. Okay, that was officers. But I got on the plane. I had my little white three-piece vest with a black blouse. I was, you know, bell-bottom pants, you know, looking good, feeling good. Got on the plane that morning at 6:30, going to Houston, Fort Sam, Houston, I thought. Well, they routed me. They had all everything stamped. And I went to Alabama, where the WACs, you know, where the enlisted females go.
Wow.
They sent me down there. I got there 6-7 in the evening. And I left that morning at 6:30. All there, traveled all that time there, got there. I says, I'm in the wrong place. I'm supposed to go on to Texas. I am an officer. I'm a second lieutenant. I'm a second lieutenant and my orders are wrong. Something is wrong. So we had to get in touch with the National Guard back in Arkansas. Somehow or another, somebody had sent all the paperwork. I don't know who did it this day. Then I had to get on a plane, go from there to Texas. I arrived at 12 midnight that night. And I said, this is my life. It's just been my life for things that happen. It's just my life. Mm. So now I just kind of accept it. When things happen, I know it's a challenge and I got to go through. Mm. I just know I got to go through. I got to persevere. And that's what I've done all my life. So I got there and I get there with my luggage and everything. And I'm just don't know where I'm going. Going to the BOQ. They dropped me off at the airport. Then somebody from the base picked me up from the base. Took me there. Then when I got there, I said, where I go, you know, nothing. So it was a young black officer, young black male. And he took me to where I was supposed to go, showed me everything. And then the next morning, I got up and went in and checked in. And that was the beginning of my basic training, which was about 6 weeks. And I was there at Fort Sam. And boy, we went through a rigorous training, which I never had before. Like the terrains, you know, getting out. This was the most devastating one. It wasn't devastating, but it was really, we had to go out and find our way out of the terrain, you know. And it was a group of us, group of nurses, all us nurses, you know, we didn't know nothing about the military, all us basic, you know, we go out there and it was about five or six of us signed in different areas and we have to go out and find our way back. So it was in a group that we was the last one getting in, but we found our way back. And then I'm not a real drinker, so I never been drinking before. So I met this young lady from Paducah, Kentucky. I never forget Paducah, Kentucky. She's a Caucasian nurse. And all of us young, you know, coming in for training. And she and I, we went out one night. We went to a party, went somewhere. And they was drinking Kentucky bourbons. Yeah, the 100 proof or something. And they was, And so I'm drinking it like, you know, because it tastes good. It tastes good. And the next day we were supposed to be going through our, of all things, where you have to mass up for attack. We were supposed to be doing that the next morning. The next morning, they didn't see Alice stay at the time. I was Alice. I didn't see this other girl. We was sacked out.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. We didn't go in. We didn't call. We didn't think about it. And I've never, ever experienced anything like that in my life because I've always been accountable, you know, on duty, on time, you know, dressed, you know, whatever. So we had to go in. We was counseled. And I just had to be honest. I was just, you know, I got messed up. I made a mistake. I really did because I'm not a drinker. Mm. So that went on my record. That's still on my record where I was, you know, and I said, that's the worst thing I ever had on my record. But, you know, and I said, you know, and it's very oftentimes I never get to tell people this. It's just so it was really something. But everything else I did well, made it through training and made it back home. Then I came back. Then we had a ceremony for all of us making it through basic training. And a big ceremony, and everybody was really excited about us, my family and me being in the military and just really interested in my job. Well, go to my job. Okay. Being an RN, you know, they don't want you to take off. Miss Casey, little short lady with white hair. I said, well, Miss Casey, I said, I'm going to have to be off 2 weeks for the summer, you know, for AT and your training in the military. She said, well, we've never done that before. And I looked at her and I said, well, Miss Casey, I said, you know, there's a time when things has to change. So you know, you may just have to change. It's just a rule that if you work for the state, you have a job and it's an obligation, you know, that, you know, and it has to be. So that's all I can say. And she looked at me, she strutted off and everything, but I still was off. So it's a state required that you be off for 2 weeks. So I got through that hassle, went through that and worked Saturdays. We did immunization. We went to the field. We had field training. We learned to set up tents. We learned to cross the terrain, get it, live out in the dark and the mosquitoes and the gnats or whatever, you know. And another great experience I had, I was in Oklahoma City when I was there serving. I was the only, no, let me go back to Arkansas, because when I was in Little Rock, no, let me go to Oklahoma City. When I was in Oklahoma City, I was the highest ranking officer on a field training exercise we had. We was out 2 weeks and it was hot. It was like, the temperature was getting up to like 104. Well, you know, the heat index, if it's that hot, it's really hot. The heat index, whenever it gets up that hot, you know, like 102, 104, you have to bring your troops in. So I had to make the decision. I was an officer that was in charge of all these white men, all these men been in the military, and that didn't go very well at all. So but I had to make a decision to bring the troops in. Well, you know, some of the sergeants and all, some of the master sergeant, they didn't want to bring them in. I said, well, you will. They will come in because I was in command. That didn't go well. I don't tell that all too often because, you know, and all the guys, the soldiers really respected me because I made decisions based upon professional wisdom, knowledge, and skills. I took care of them. I did what I had to do to in order for them to have a safe environment. And I made that decision. So when I got back, my chief nurse said, well, Alice, I hear some of the things happen out there. I said, yes. I said, we had quite an experience out there. And I knew he, you know, he being a man, I knew they had talked about me, but I didn't care. And I said, yes. I said, we had a wonderful time. I said, it got pretty hot, so I had to pull the troops in. He said, yeah, I heard about that, you know. And I said, yes. So we came in, we didn't have any casualties. I had a few, had heat injuries, heat strokes. I'm starting IVs and you know, doing all this stuff to try to keep them alive and keep them safe. So we made it through that. So that was an experience. Another experience I had in, wow, I hadn't thought about all these experiences.
that's quite all right. I mean, you were the first second lieutenant in the National Guard. That's outstanding. That's amazing. Tony, I don't know if you have any questions you want to piggyback on.
I do want to interject. I think that there is such a powerful resilience that you have. It seems like the women of your time had a confidence that carried them through those times, the 60s and the 70s. What would you tell your younger self? What would you say to young people today to help us get through these times? Because you went through difficult times being an African-American and also a female, but yet you were able to carry yourself with dignity and respect and get through all of the harsh treatment that I know you experienced.
The main thing that I have in myself and I would like to be able to instill into each individual, and that's what I'm doing right now with my young men, even the babies, the little boys, 3, 4, 5, is to, if you have a vision and a desire to do anything, it's possible, no matter what it is. And oftentimes, what you desire to do doesn't fit someone else's idea about you or what they expect for you to do, what they see you to do, or what they really want you to do. That doesn't really matter. What you have to be able to do is sit back and take a sincere look at yourself within yourself to feel what's that passion, what drives you, what motivates you, what excites you, what's encouraging to you. And you have to be able to be ready to take the chances, a step out. You have to be able to know that you can't be fearful. And I think oftentimes people are so fearful of the unknown, fearful of things may happen that never happen. And they stop in their tracks. I had to do this with my daughter and making her decision when she finished high school. My husband saw her to be the best lawyer there ever was because she's smart, she's witty, she's creative, she's very, her mind is, God just really blessed her to be just, ooh, so smart. I can't hardly believe it the way she is. But she's always been very creative and she's been more artsy into the art field, theater, dancing, singing, music, instructions through songs, writing, and so forth. So when she finished college, and I said, Amber, I says, whatever you do, you make a decision. Because she had got accepted, go to law school in New York and all this stuff. She had a grand idea. I says, I stood up in the kitchen, microwave, I never thought about it before. I says, this is a time in your life where you're at a crossroad. And I said, decision about what you do in life is based upon what you do. I said, now, I know your father and many others see you as being a lawyer, but if that's not what you want to do, and Amber, you know your passion, as you know what you've been doing since you was 3 years old. She was teaching phonics when she was 3 years old, you know, helping her teacher, preschool. And I says, you know what you like, you know what you love, you know your drive. And I said, you need to follow your dreams. And with that, she made a decision to go into theater. So I tell the young men, I says, you know, no matter what you want to do, you can do it.
Amen.
Yeah. Amen. You Amen. Definitely have a passion for young males, African-American males. Where did this come from? And tell us about the book that you wrote about it.
I guess it really came from growing up. I grew up in the South. My grandparents raised us. And I was the oldest, had one brother, and it was three girls. So I saw not only how things affected him, and I guess I could feel it, being the oldest and being that mother wit in me, how he transitioned from the teenage years growing up, how he went through when we lost our parent, our mother, our father was an alcoholic, and then watched my grandfather living on a farm, and he going to work sun up to sundown, 6 days a week. And, you know, I saw all that. And I saw how we had to and ride the school bus being segregated, segregation and discrimination and all the stuff. Can't use this bathroom and all that. And I looked at all this stuff and I had a heart. I have a heart for them because they have so much to overcome and to go through. And it doesn't stop when they get a certain age. And it doesn't stop if they get educated. It doesn't stop if they have millions of trillions of dollars. It never stops. So I just have that passion for me to be everything I can to encourage them to just go a little further, just go a little further and never give up, never stop trying. And that has to be hard. When you go up, walk out of your door and go down the street, that you could be murdered just because of the color of your skin. So I have that passion for them. And that's not that I don't care for the female, but we Black women are so strong. You know, God just put it in us to endure, to stand up and to overcome everything that has been against us over the year. And we're still doing it. I told my husband, I said, you know, I said, honey, I said, you know, I'm asking the Lord to fix this thing. I said, but the only thing that the Lord can do, that those people can't fix it in the White House. They don't know how to fix it. They don't have a heart to fix it. One thing, they don't have a heart. It's not in their heart to fix it. They don't know how. They don't really care. And I said, it's going to take Black women to come forth. We're going to have to stand up and we're going to have to fight this battle. And one day people going to look around and see that's our only hope. He said, baby, you shouldn't say that. I said, well, that's just what I feel. Mm. What has happened in the last couple of years. Mm. So I have that desire and I want to continue to do what I'm doing to just be there for them.
Can you give us some of the examples that you put in place to help the young men?
One thing I work with the youth. I work with the youth at my church. And we've been setting up programs that when they come in, they know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are people of importance. They're not just another child, another student, you know, just somebody involved. What I try to do when I go, I actually have conversation with them. You know, they know Mama Alice. They know, and everybody in my church called me Miss Alice, because I know that at times when they can't talk to anyone, but I feel that God is going to be doing more. I had a Zoom meeting with them, 9 men that I have on my book when I had them, and it was just, I got them on Zoom for all of them to meet each other, and it was just really, it was awesome. It was just beautiful. And during that meeting and after that meeting, God showed me that this was just the beginning. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm an open vessel. I did do one thing that was very instrumental and it really turned out real well. My barber, we went to see him and he was very interested in. So one day I did just came home and made sandwiches and took them to his place. And that was so, they were so overwhelmed with what I did for his staff. So it seems that a person can do just simple things to make a difference.
Definitely. I agree. Tell us about your book and what is it about?
A Plea to Our Sons from a Mother Who Cares. And it's really about just what I've been saying is instilling in them the idea that they're created for a purpose. God didn't make no mistake when they were born, even if, like me, being born to a 16-year-old mother. But out of that, God already knew that I will be a person that loves people. And that's what he created in me. So I want them to know that we mothers out here, we support them, we love them in spite of all the indifferences that they may have, or in spite of everything that they go through, even during the drug times, the drug banging and the gang banging and all the times that they grow, the things that they do. I never look at them like they're less than anything that God created, and they can achieve anything that they have within their heart to do. Never give up.
I think there's such an opportunity here. I think sometimes we can become so overwhelmed with all of the problems that we face as people of African descent in this country that we don't know that there's a little thing you can do.
Right.
Like one person can make such a huge difference. It reminded me of a time when I was growing up and I went to church by myself. I was never popular. Always a little awkward and really skinny kid, which I got up and I went to Sunday school. And I remember the boys were teasing me and I was about 13. So when you're 13, you want attention, but you don't want the boys to tease you. And I felt bad about myself. And I remember one kind man, I'll never forget him as long as I live. He walked up to the boys and he told them to be nice to me. And had the boys apologize to me. And I just remember that one person, I probably would have never gone to that church again had he not said that. And I just remember how wonderful it was and how I felt like, wow, this is a place where I belong. Mm-hmm. I know you're making a huge difference in the lives of those. We don't have to be their parents. But it takes a village.
That's right. It takes a village. And it takes a large village.
Yes. How can people find your book?
Well, they can get it through Book Baby. And also, it's on Amazon. It's on Amazon. Great. Uh-huh. So many, several people said they got it through that.
Great.
And my Facebook page, I have my Facebook page open under Alice Taylor. And people like you, you know, I was just thinking the other day, as you know, God is just so wonderful. Put people in your life that's really needed. We want to be a vessel for him to be used. All we have to do is just be open and willing to receive what he sends to us. A lot of time busy is just an excuse. Mm. And I don't use the word busy as an excuse. And the opportunities when they come, you need to be able to latch on to them, because like one of the guys in my book said, oftentimes those opportunities don't come no more.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Miss Alice. It's been wonderful talking to you. I just want to give you a big hug. If I ever meet you, I'm still fascinated from your story. And, you know, and I know your husband wrote a book growing up in the South.
And he's a Vietnam veteran.
Mm. Wow. Veteran.
So he served. He came near death. He got quieter. Mm. And it's so much I want to do. It's things that I want to do to propel him. But he had a stroke in 2012. Mm. And he had some deficit from that. However, he's able to care for himself, personal care. And we talk and we're where we are now.
Yeah.
Well, you are using your life. You are a perfect example of someone who's using their life. I think as long as we're breathing and we're able, we're supposed to be serving. So I just want to thank you for being that example, for your service to our country, you and your husband's service to our country, and now your sustained service in our community. And I know you're touching a lot of lives.
I really appreciate it. And all I appreciate right. you all for doing what you're doing.
This is Black Family Table Talk.
That's what's up.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Black Family Table Talk. We pray that you have gotten some tools to put into your strong Black family toolbox. Be sure to visit our Black-owned business directory on our website at blackfamilytabletalk.com/products, where you can shop and recycle dollars back into our community.
You can also join our family. It's free to join, and you won't miss out on special discounts and product offers reserved exclusively for you, our Black Family Table Talk subscribers. Tune in next time for more episodes of Black Family Table Talk, and be sure to tell a friend.
Under Section 107 of the Copyright Act 1976, allowance is made for fair use for purposes such as criticism, comments, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, and research. Fair use is a use permitted by copyright statute that may otherwise be infringing. The news and opinions expressed on Black Family Table Talk do not necessarily reflect various platform hosts. All topics are for entertainment purposes only. Discretion is strongly advised and all commentary is alleged. This is a Micah 68 Media LLC production.